right, so Barker, what was the final score last night? Again?
3-1.
Who won?
The Yankees.
You know why I didn't know? You know why I don't know?
Because you don't watch the games?
No, I watch the games, but I turned it off. I turned it off after Robbie Ray was out of the game because that's all I needed.
Well, after the second inning, that game was over anyway.
No, all I needed to see was Robbie Ray. Whatever else happened in that game, I could care less. I could care less. Robbie Ray, that instantly made me feel better about the Blue Jays rotation. And we talked going into this series against the Yankees because now we're going to see Jameson Taillon, and now we're going to see Corey Kluber. We'll get a read, an early season read, admittedly, but we will get a read nonetheless on the Yankees rotation versus the Blue Jays rotation. And after seeing Robbie Ray last night, I'm feeling better.
You all right?
I'm better. I'm feeling better than I was about a week ago.
You'd be okay having Ryu, Mats, and Ray.
Yes.
All three in a row. You'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I'm ready now. I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it. Let's do it.
Well, I mean, look, I will say what it did do. It did, you know, I was listening to his Zoom call that he had. I stayed up late for that.
Well, it wasn't that late.
It was pretty late.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah. And he was talking about everything he'd went through, right? He'd fallen down about 7 or 8 stairs, and he'd bumped his elbow, and he had a giant bruise on it, and he'd suffered through that. So it took him about 5 days before he started doing anything from the time he'd fallen. And then he'd play what he did. He said he did. He played catch at 60 feet. He moved back to 120 feet. When he was at 120 feet, he said he started feeling really, really good. Then he had 2 side sessions.
Mm-hmm.
One of those was up and down, right? He'd throw 20 pitches, sit down for 10, 15 minutes, get back up, throw another 25 pitches. And then he played that game at the PDC place over there with the, you know, the trying to get all fired up and, you know, work on his grunting. And he did that for what he do. He said 4-plus innings to do 63 pitches. Why I'm saying these things is it just goes back to the fact of the month of spring training that they have. What I just read off to you is exactly all they need. I took a picture of it. I wrote it down and took a picture of it.
So hang on. Now you wrote it down.
I did.
I was in a hurry. Why didn't you just bring the paper with you?
Because it was on my son's one of his papers that he was working on his Zoom class.
So he's now got stuff on this. He's going to hand in a paper.
He's going to say 120 feet.
Jesus.
2 bullpens. PDC Park.
Okay.
He's going to say all that, but my point here is, it doesn't take much to get these guys ready to throw. No. What he throw 84 pitches. You know, look.
Well, he did say he was already built up. So.
Well, I mean, it was 23. It was 23 days between competitive starts.
You're right.
You know, that March 19th was the last one against Detroit. And then you know how he is. He's a max effort guy. He needs that controlled effort kind of thing. And
lots of people were talking about his pants on social media. A lot of people thought his pants looked a little tight. Remember the Walker Buehler thing? I know. I'm just saying. A lot of people in social media were commenting on his.
Good for them.
On his pants.
Even more reason to not have social media.
Oh, it is.
Even more reason.
But I was on it for another reason. So.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. I just happened to stumble on it. And I saw.
So you're saying now the Blue Jays are going to win the World Series because Robbie Ray's legit, Mats is legit, and Ryu is legit.
No, I'm saying they might be good enough now to finish third.
90-72.
By the way, are we gonna make our bet public? We're gonna make our bet public right now.
What did I say
about the Red Sox and the Jays? We're gonna make our bet public.
No, we're not. We are not.
All right.
But I will say the at-bats were okay. Did you like the at-bats? The first 5, because you only saw the first 5 innings.
They were better.
Were they good? They were okay.
They were okay. Let me ask you, Garrett Cole.
I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I like getting you fired up.
Mm-hmm.
First and second. Second inning.
No. Don't even say
Kirk
what you're thinking.
Kirk is coming to the plate.
Don't say what you're
Cole
thinking.
Cole is struggling. For whatever reason, finding the slider, finding location for the fastball, maybe overthrowing a bit, you know, out of the delivery, yada, yada, yada. Do you ever just think?
No.
My team's struggling offensively. Probably not going to score a ton of runs off this guy. 2-0 looks a lot better than 1-0.
No.
offensively, they're struggling, have trouble hitting home runs.
No.
Just don't throw fastball down the middle to a catcher.
I'm not bunting. I'm not bunting.
So you do know what happened, right? You do know that 12 pitches later, it was good morning, good afternoon, good night. Yes. And he's on the interstate pushing cruise control through the next four innings.
Yes.
Just rolling right through the Blue Jays lineup. I'm just saying. I'm with you to an extent. But I think sometimes you got to step back if you're the manager. Look at the big picture.
No.
Kirk had no chance. Palacios had zero chance. Marcus Semien, zero chance. After that game was over.
No.
You knew that they weren't scoring again. They had no chance of scoring because he found, for whatever reason, after he got through
he
found the slider. Once he finds the slider,
They got Garrett Cole out of the game, and the game was close, and Kyle Higashioka hit a couple of home. The decision to not bunt in the second inning had no impact in that game. None. Zero. Nada.
Nada. If I ever buy a baseball team and luck up and trip on the lottery, winning the lottery.
I'm just being consistent. Bunting for a single or something like that, whatever floats your boat. But in the first two innings of a game, no.
You are saying that guy's really, really good and one of the two best pitchers on planet Earth.
Yeah,
and we
have no chance. So let's just give it. Let's give an out.
Baton and make it a little bit easier for the rookie and tries to do too much, which is what all rookies do. I did it, and every other guy that's ever played baseball his first couple of games, especially when he's facing
this
number 1-0.
Why is Alejandro Kirk in your team if he can't handle that?
Well, right now he's not.
Why is he on your team?
Offensively sound.
But he's supposed to be. My understanding is he's on this team because he is a major offensive upgrade. Over Reese McGuire. That's everything everybody tells me. Everything everybody tells me is that this guy offensively is ready for the major leagues. Now, I'm not going to read anything into just one at bat against Garrett Cole, but I'll tell you what. If you are ready for the major leagues, and if you are a guy that people in the organization, you seem to be hearing now that it's not out of the question that this guy eventually becomes the organization's number one catcher, then, dude, you got to hit Garrett Cole in the second inning.
Nobody,
you got to give me an at-bat.
First inning, second inning, seventh inning. No, it's rare.
Got to give me an at-bat. Don't bunt.
Okay. Then you see exactly what you saw.
We're arguing about a bunt in the second, a decision to bunt or not to bunt in the second inning.
I'm asking you a question on whether you would ponder on that.
I would not even.
To give your team a little confidence in 2-0 sounds a lot better than 1-0.
Confidence?
Yeah, they don't have a ton.
Confidence?
Yeah, you need confidence.
You're not driving in a run with a bunt.
Well, you're getting a guy to set maybe third, maybe second.
Maybe
second.
Makes
it a little easier for a guy to maybe roll over something to second base, get a little easy. It'd be a lot easier than driving in a run from second.
I don't know what happened.
12 pitches later, they're out of the inning, and basically the game's over. That's all I'm saying. Every once in a while, you got to do it 99% of the time.
Dumb.
But occasionally.
That's dumb.
Well, they lost the game.
That's dumb. I mean, I'm just saying. You should, he's not good enough to be in the lineup. He's not good enough to be in the lineup if all he can do is bunt in the second inning. He's just not. Sorry.
I don't think you're doing it every single time he comes up in the second inning. It's not when you're doing it.
I'm just saying. Anyhow.
If he plays today, he's not doing it in the second inning because of who's standing on the mound.
Garrett Cole completed 6 innings of work. 3 hits, 1 earned run, struck out 8. His 29 strikeouts are tied with Tyler Glasnow for the lead.
Yeah, he retired. He retired 15 in a row, and he threw, 22 batters. He threw strike 1 to 19 of those. Yeah, this
first
is
batter.
All points that I'm trying to make about the second inning.
First pitcher in Yankees history with
there
8 strikeouts
is.
And 2 runs or fewer in each of his 3 games of a season.
You're just two adding of those, to what I'm saying.
2 of those have been against the Blue Jays.
There you go. Yeah. So why not? Just 12 pitches out of the inning, game's over basically.
Drop a bunt in the second inning. Oh, look, we got a guy at second.
Oh. I'm about winning games and scoring runs. Not because I'm scared
who's,
about.
Who's following Kirk up next?
Palacios. You really think he's not going
to? You're turning it over. Pass the baton to Josh Palacios.
Maybe he tries to bump for a single. At least you get the guy home.
Sure. Let's pass the baton to Josh Palacios.
With a runner on third.
There you go. There's some managing.
Well, he is coming
There's
off
some
a 4-for-4 game. He is coming off a 4-for-4 game.
Let's pass the baton to Josh Palacios.
You make
the
it
only
easier.
Way you bunt is if you pinch hit. Bunt and then pinch hit for Palacios and have somebody who can make contact. I'm just kidding.
Boy.
Anyhow, what'd you make of Robbie Ray? Never mind this nonsensical thing about
about losing. Losing's cooler than winning. Because I got pride. I never butt.
It's not a matter of pride.
It's all about winning. Who cares what it looks
it's
like?
It's a matter of not trusting Josh Palacios. Now, I don't think you increase.
12 pitches later, Jeff, he struck out three guys on 12 pitches. Ooh. They had zero chance. Point is, give them a chance. That's the point.
This might be the stupidest argument we've had on Baseball Central.
It's not really an argument. Common sense thing where you occasionally think because your team's struggling and you got a guy that's really, 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 you just read off every stat.
Overmanaging.
You're talking about a thing that hadn't happened since like 1912.
Drop a
where he's struck out so many people.
Stupid.
Well, they'll end up where you predicted them to end up.
Anyhow, let's move on.
Robbie Ray was decent. Wasn't outstanding. Wasn't
now
awful.
You're going to be Debbie Downer.
No, it's not Debbie Downer. He could be better. He had 5-3-2 counts. Yeah, he threw 84 pitches. He threw 50 strikes. Would you rather see the 50 at somewhere around closer to 60?
Breaking ball was better.
I will say that he did make adjustments pitch by pitch. You could see him beating on his back leg, which tells me. Nobody asked him on the Zoom call, but what that tells me is to stay within your delivery, stay back. You know, and he kept flirting around with where he was stepping. You know, when he was in his windup, he wants to step in the same spot all the time. It's little things that'll tell you, if I'm not doing it, I'm going to choke it off. I'm going to throw non-competitive pitches. My pitches are going to go up. I'm not going to throw as many innings. I'm going to throw deeper in counts. I got a better chance of throwing one right down the middle. That's sort of what that was. But, yeah, he was – after, for all things considering on what he's been through and the difference, the time between his competitive games, there's, you know, anybody can go stand in a bullpen with somebody standing there and throw as hard as you can, but throwing against the Yankees lineup and making quality pitches, yeah, it's a good start.
In three career starts against the Yankees, he's given up 4 earned runs. Robbie Ray. I know. I find that interesting. Now, admittedly, it's only 16 innings. 14 strikeouts, 8 walks. His pitch selection was interesting.
Second time through, he used his curveball more. I think he had a better feel for that, and he did his slider. And I think the pitch count was okay. The 3-2 counts, you know, the 5 of those, that's a lot. 5-3-2 counts, that's a lot of pitches to be throwing to certain guys. And the more they see you, the better chance.
I got to say this, too. And as the one person seemingly in this city who doesn't rag on umpires all the time, that it was an interesting strike zone last night. There was a lot from both sides.
It is what it is. You should be used to seeing that. I'll argue a little bit about the second inning bunt. I'm not the umpire thing. Turn the page.
Did not necessarily get the benefit of the doubt from the umpire. It was consistent that way. I'm just saying. I thought that the strike zone was a little.
Behind the plate. They're stubborn. They're going to call what they want to call, regardless of what you think the strike is, or whether it's not a strike.
Hey, we got to talk about Rowdy Tellez. He got a single in the second inning. Maybe should have bunted.
You're funny.
You got a single in the second inning.
He was the one of the guys that was on to bunt over.
Yeah. Ooh, should have bunted. He should have bunted for a single. He was 0 for 28.
That is not true.
He was 0 for 28, going back to last year. He was 0 for 21 to start the season.
Who cares about that?
1991. Socrates Brito, your favorite.
What have you done for me lately?
2019 had the longest drought to begin a season in team history. You made the point you thought that you saw some better at bats from Rowdy in the last series.
Yeah. I mean, as long as he's not facing Chapman at the end of the game, I mean, that's a tough draw. I mean, the 99 to 101 with that thing he's throwing
now.
And
that strike zone.
And that thing. Well, there you go. I mean, make
that
excuses.
That last pitch. Come on. That last pitch is almost 5 inches below the strike zone.
I mean, it's a tough draw. You know, you'd rather not roll up a bunch of lefties against that guy. Obvious reasons. But, yeah, he looks a little bit more comfortable. I mean, sooner or later, he's going to have to put up a little bit more than. What was he? 0 for 28 before he got a knock up the middle? Yeah. I mean, he hit that hard. The direction of the way the ball went is good. That means he's staying through the ball. The direction of. His barrel is okay. You know, he's not out and around. He's not late. He's not early. He's a little bit more on time than he normally has been. You know, Kevin Biggio might be a little bit more worried than Rowdy Tellez, because I'm not sure if Rowdy's going to get enough rope to struggle. I don't know what they think of Rowdy. You know, it's, are they going to give him an opportunity to get out of this? That's the question. And they will, Kevin. You know, Kevin's got a giant uppercut in his swing, and that elevated heater, can he lay off that? That's hard. That's hard. That pitch up is very hard to lay off of, because as a hitter, that thing looks like it's right down the middle. Especially when you go to take your stride and your foot lands in an athletic position, everything tends to look up and down, harder to judge. Where is that ball at? That's an adjustment he's going to have to make, especially with two strikes.
Bigger worry. Tellez, rank the worries in order. The hitting worries in order. Tellez, Biggio, Gurriel Jr.
Gurriel, I'm not worried about. He's a slow starter. The OPS is somewhere around 500 in March and April. His batting average is about 202 in March and April. Look, he's got long arms. Sometimes he's a caster. You know what casting means? That bottom hand is like a fishing pole. If you had a fishing pole in your hand, you were casting it. His hands go.
We need Brenton here to talk.
His
about
hands are going towards second base instead of towards his target. He's an out and around guy right now. He's a breaking ball hitter. You know, he's not so much a velocity guy. He's hunting breaking ball. That takes a little time for everything to get in sync, and that direction of that steering wheel, which is that bottom hand, has to be better. Has to be going towards his target a little bit more. Kevin Biggio is probably the biggest worry for me. Rowdy Tellez, look, I play him 15 games in a row, and then let's see what happens. Right. Is that going to happen? Probably not. So that's why, for me, I don't really know. If I were running the team, he'd be playing a lot, but just because he's left-handed. And everybody, every time he walks to the plate, they think he can go way over the fence. And that might get you, somebody tightens up a little bit, maybe hang him a breaking ball, throw him a fastball down the middle, and it just takes him one or two hard-hit balls to get some confidence. You see his bats, they're a little bit more confident up there. When it's just his whole approach again, it's who he's facing and what kind of stuff they got, but you know, he squared the ball up the middle. Mm-hmm. I just think, Kevin, I'm not real sure what you expect to get from him. League's made an adjustment. Not sure he can level out his swing enough to make an adjustment on that pitch.
I guess the thing with Kevin that concerns me is it's the same thing, right? It's the same thing. It's not like anybody's discovered something in the off season or through spring training.
End of the year last year, they made that adjustment, right.
Rays seemed to be the team last year. It was criminal what they did.
Spent it early and elevated with power late and counts. That's kind of what they're doing against him. You know, maybe you move him down the order. When all things are equal and everybody's back, Teoscar and George Springer.
So what do you?
Maybe you put him ninth.
So this has gone on now for a while, and clearly there's smart people in that organization. Kevin's a smart guy.
Yep.
I'm sure everybody. They're all saying they've all noticed and identified what we've said.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
Don't swing at it.
If you're Kevin Biggio,
don't swing at it.
Even if it means being called out on borderline,
you've made adjustments already. You've learned how to play a new position, or you're learning how. You know, his throws yesterday look really good.
They did look,
and
good.
He got a little giddy up on it, which they is odd. Really good. I hadn't seen that yet. Saw that last night. The elevated fastball. You have to figure out a way. You can't cover the entire strike zone. You just can't. No hitter can do that. Mike Trout can't do that. Mike Trout don't like the ball up and in. He tries to not swing at it until he gets two strikes. You see a defensive swing where he's trying to foul that off.
Can you do that,
though? He knows that pitchers can't throw that same spot all the time.
Can you do that, though, and still be a contributor to your team offensively?
I mean, and on top of that, he's trying to be aggressive early in counts, which is outside the norm. I don't think you can do all three of those.
So you think there's basically too much on this plate right now?
There Simplify is. That's why. Everything. That's why for me, don't hit it. Don't put him in the five spot. Mm-hmm. Definitely don't put him in the two spot when all things are equal.
Okay.
Put him down the order. Put him. I just think the ninth spot is a perfect spot for him. He can get on base and turn it over. He can be himself.
Yeah, you maximize what he. The one thing he can do, slumping or whatever, is he can take a walk. So if you stick him in the ninth spot, you turn the lineup over.
Maybe he wouldn't get as many elevated fastballs because of who's standing on the on-deck circle. Yeah. Maybe he would get more of a fastball on the plate.
I think you could.
That's all.
I'm not speaking for Charlie, but I wonder if maybe that's something you do when Springer's back and when you've kind of, when Gurriel's going a little bit, maybe that's when you make that move. I don't know.
I think it more depends on Springer.
But I'm with you.
Springer needs to hurry.
I'm with you. I kind of, yeah, he does. He does need the time's hurry. A waste. He needs to get his ass back.
Hurry
here.
Up quickly.
Yes.
So people aren't butting.
Sweeney Murdy of WFAN. What are you? You and your bunting. Sweeney Murdy of WFAN will join us. We'll talk some Yankees. Your number one, too, Barker. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Shout out to Andrew Brash listening to us in Stockholm, Sweden on the Sportsnet website. I know a couple of words in Swedish. Do you want me to say them?
Out loud.
Probably shouldn't. No, I probably shouldn't. I learned them.
I know a couple of words in Spanish, too. You want me to say them?
No, but I guarantee you I know the same words you know.
You too.
Blue Jays baseball tonight, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590.
7:07. Get it right.
7:07 on Sportsnet 590, the span. The span. The span and Portsnet.
I got you all flustered about bunting in the
second
inning.
Well, you do, yeah. I'm still kind of pissed off about bunting in the second inning. It's just, it's, again.
It's not it's, stupid. It's called winning, Jeff.
No, it's called winning. Tomorrow, which is Wednesday.
Oh, boy.
We will be on from noon to 1 with Baseball Central. It'll be a pregame show.
Noon to 1.
Am I wrong?
Noon to 1. Noon to 1.
I said noon to 1.
Oh.
Tomorrow. And then we will be on after the game, only we will call it Blue Jays Talk.
Yeah.
But it will still be Baseball Central doing
Blue Jays
Talk.
We're taking calls the first hour.
I believe we're taking calls the first hour.
Okay.
You can text us all the time at 590-590. Barker won't read them because he is not master technology. Mm. I will read them. Please include your name and the place you're from. And don't be a jackass, because if you are, I'm not going to read your text. I'm just not. And I have a very good jackass detector. So I won't even open it. So you're going to have spent all that time and all that energy sending something to me. I'm not going to read it. You can't sneak the cheese by the rat. That's right. So don't bother doing that. Just don't. It's a waste of time. Do we have Sweeney Murdy from WFAN? Sweeney Murdy, how you doing?
I'm trying to figure out how I got past that detector of yours. That's how I'm doing.
I don't know. It's just I just like to let people know that there's no point. Look, I am all for jackassery. I have spent the greater part of my 62 years on this planet being a jackass, and I will probably be a jackass till the day I die. But it's just pointless to do it in text because I'm not going to read it. I'm just not going to read it.
Yeah. Like, I'll remember that. Thanks for the warning.
So what should I expect?
How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Barker thinks that the Jays lost the game because they didn't bunt in the second inning yesterday. But that's another story. He thought that the catcher who was on the team, because he's apparently one of the best hitters God has created, because he couldn't handle Garrett Cole, that he should have bunted.
Him and everybody else.
You know what's amazing about that second inning? I noted this yesterday. Garrett Cole started the second inning by walking a guy who hasn't walked this year and giving up a hit to a guy who didn't have a hit this year.
Yep.
Yeah, that's.
And after that, he pretty much said, you know what? Yep. I think I've done enough. Mm-hmm. Then he went to work.
Yeah, then he said, wait a minute. He's looking over the bags and go, Todd Garrett Cole, come on, I'm not going to do this. What do we expect from Jameson Taillon tonight, and how important is he, Sweeney, to what the Yankees need to do this year?
You know, if you've ever watched the Pirates and had a chance to see Jameson Taillon pitch, and I can't say that I really did, to be honest with you, but over the years, if you watched him, you're not going to see that guy. You know, here's a guy who, after his second Tommy John surgery, which was, 2 years ago, decided that, you know, something I'm doing is not working right if I need a second Tommy John, so I better rethink this. And he kind of reworked his mechanics a little bit, shorter delivery, and he's, you know, what he did all of this in preparation to pitch in the regular season. He finally pitched in the regular season game for the first time last week. So all of this, you know, backyard scientific work, he finally put to the test and threw pretty well. He said his fastball was playing up more than he anticipated. So what you're going to see, guys, you're going to see a reading that says 93 or 94, and you know, that's not that much these days, but it's going to look faster to the hitters. At least that's what it did the last time out, and that's what some of Tyone's experience was in the spring too. So I think it's going to be fun to watch him kind of progress this year and see if he can build on the promise. For those who don't know, Jameson Taillon was once picked second overall in the draft. The first overall pick in that draft was Bryce Harper. The third overall pick in that draft is Manny Machado. That's where he fit talent-wise coming out of high school.
So, Eddie, what's going on with Giancarlo Stanton at the plate?
You know, Kevin, it's hard to ever tell with him because he looked really good in the spring, and everything just kind of seemed, when it's off, it's, you know, it doesn't appear that he's off by that much. He's just kind of swinging and missing. You know, I really anticipated he would have a better start to the year. Now, I don't know the numbers he has off of Ryu, but one of the things that the Yankees pointed to a couple of years ago with Stanton is that he is significantly better when he's had, you know, looks at pitchers. And everything seems to jump up, more so than normal. Most hitters, that's true, but more so than normal. He seems to do better the more times he sees a guy. So, you know, we'll see if that matters to him after, you know, having you know, seen him the first time through. What did he do? He went 0-for-5 in the opener. Didn't really. He got two at bats against Rue. Didn't really do much. Didn't get it out of the infield. But we'll see what makes a difference. The thing I know about this, Kevin, is that, you know, Stanton runs hot and cold, and when he's running hot, you don't want to be anywhere near him. So we'll see how he does here.
What is your take on how the Gleyber Torres situation plays itself out?
I think he has every opportunity every day to show the Yankees that they do not have to spend a couple $100 million on a shortstop this winter. And so far he has not answered it in a way that benefits him. And I don't mean that he's a player that the Yankees would get rid of. I just think that he's out of position, you know, and I think most people have recognized that for a long time. Even as a second baseman, he has shortcomings. As the Yankees have publicly admitted that he's better at second than he is at short. When they first acquired him and he was this uber prospect, people around the game said, yeah, he's a shortstop, but he'll eventually move off of there, just body type, things like that. Right now, he's not making the plays consistently enough to be the long-term answer. And the only reason, there are two main reasons why the Yankees have to address this now. One is because they consider themselves a championship contender. And two, there's a boatload of free agent shortstops available at the end of this season. One of them is off the market already in Francisco Lindor. I would expect all of these guys to get there, I would think, in the winter. And that's why this is hyper-focused on Gleyber Torres right now. I don't know what you guys think, but I look at a guy, and defense is not a small sample size here, you know, because, you know, defense from the previous seasons count as they do now when you're looking at this. And he's not proved to me that he is going to be the long-term answer at shortstop. I'm not saying he's a bad player, and he's a tremendous hitter. I just feel like if there are options out there, like there will be this winter, the Yankees clearly know that this is make or break on decision time. Is he your shortstop? And so far, he's answered no by his play.
Okay, decision time. You mentioned that. You set this up perfectly for me. If the New York Yankees do not win the World Series, is Aaron Boone the manager in 2022?
You have to be more specific than that. What are the New York Yankees? Do they lose in the World Series? Do they not make the playoffs? Do they lose in the Division Series, the ALCS? What's your script here?
I would think since the Dodgers have won the World Series, the Yankees, it's been a while. You know, the Yankees is not the little engine that could. They're the big, bad Yankees. You know, they haven't won a World Series in a while. You would think it's World Series or bust. In my mind, I don't know how it is in you know, the front office of the New York Yankees, but you would think they're thinking the same thing. If they don't win the World Series, is he the manager in 2022?
Well, I hate to sidestep you, but it really just appears to me on how they get there. Like, if they lose in the World Series, does that mean that Aaron Boone is gone? There does not appear to be friction amongst Brian Cashman, Aaron Boone, and Hal Steinbrenner. I don't think Aaron Boone is managing with an eye on keeping his job. I think there's a difference too because of where he came from. You know, he was not in the baseball operations or administration or on field for 10 years after he played, and all of a sudden somebody offered him a managing job. You know, he'll go do something else. He'll go back to broadcasting or do something else.
Yep.
I think he has enough respect from people around the game. So I don't think he's managing with the World Series or bust mentality. I think he wants to win the World Series. I don't think it's something that he says, you know, I better win now or else I'm not going to get another contract. That is from his perspective. From the Yankees' perspective, yeah, I mean, they want to win, but I don't have any indications that there's friction there that would say, listen, if he doesn't win this year, he's out. And again, I think you have to, you know, spell out for me what the rest of the season looks like before I'm able to tell you how that affects his job status. Mm-hmm.
Sweeney, really good of you to do this, man. Thanks so much. Stay safe.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, you got it, guys. See you later.
See ya.
That is Sweeney Murdy, WFAN. And again, we'll have 7:07 tonight, first pitch. What are you looking at? Are you looking at me like that?
I don't know. Just make you wonder about the Yankees. If they're, say, most of the year, Stanton and Judge are healthy most of the year. 125 games apiece. Let's say that. And they don't win the World Series. That's probably...
You know what, though, Bark? The game is different now. Managers don't get fired as often as they used to. And I think part of that is because, I mean, we've talked about this. Part of it is because the manager is an extension of the front office. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if Kevin Cash gets fired, it's probably going to be because of decisions made by his analytics people. Let's be honest. Same thing. How much does Charlie Montoyo, and I'm not saying this to slag Charlie, but how much does he actually control what goes on with that team?
Yep.
So I think managers have a longer shelf life. Having said that, you know, the Yankees are spending a lot of money, and I don't know as much if it's the fact the Dodgers won as it's the fact that the Rays were in the World Series. So let me throw this at you. If you are the New York Yankees and you're spending all that money,
mm-hmm,
and the Rays win the East this year, see, I think at that point you begin to wonder if Aaron Boone takes them to the... To me, it's getting to the World Series is the most important thing. And if you get to the World Series, then I think you've done a really good job as a manager.
Takes some luck to win it.
Exactly.
Sure it does.
Exactly. That's why I always tell people, getting to the championship game...
is the hardest part.
It is.
Yeah.
It is the hardest part.
Yeah.
So I think that's a factor here. But I will say this, you know, if the Yankees don't go to the World Series and the Rays do go to the World Series, at some point you have to ask yourself, if you're the Yankees, now the question isn't, is Aaron Boone the guy that can take us to the World Series? The question is, well, maybe part of that, but the question becomes, why can't Aaron Boone make us better than what the Rays are? I think the Rays are kind of a complicating issue here because, you know, every GM in baseball wets themselves when the Rays win because their owner's going to call.
Yeah,
let me get this straight. Those guys had what's their payroll? Yeah. We're paying $18 million to what? And that's their entire infield. I'm just saying that 590 is a text line, by the way. Well, there you go. Dennis in Victoria Harbor, Ontario. Listen to your co-host. Barker makes sense. It's about manufacturing runs. It doesn't matter what inning you're in.
Let me say this the way.
Somebody wants you to put me in a rear naked chokehold. What the hell is that?
No idea. You? Me put you in it? Anyway, I just think it has to do with how your lineup's doing and who's on the mound. That's all. And where you're at that part of the lineup, and you got a guy on the ropes occasionally. I'm not saying do it all the time, but occasionally. I don't even know if Kirk and Bunch. You ever seen Kirk Bunt?
No.
I mean, 97 on a black can't be the easiest thing to bunt.
I just got to read this from Ryan in Victoria. Barker Stradamus. You know what Nostradamus is, right? The dude that predicted all sorts of stuff. Nostradamus. So somebody says, Bark Stradamus, quote, 94 is back leg city. Higgy's first home run hit off 94, not well located. 94 is the new 90 poo miles per hour. If it ain't painted, it's good hitting. Ryan Victoria. So did you say this yesterday?
I've said it, yes.
94 is back leg city.
Get it ready. Get the foot down early. It's coming. Oh, boy.
94 is back leg city.
Back leg city. Well, I mean, if it's located, it could be jam city.
Our listeners are smart.
Middle.
Our listeners are smart, which surprises me that a guy in Victoria Harbor would want to bunt in the second inning. I'm just kidding, Dennis. I'm just kidding.
I don't think Dennis wants to bunt all the time.
No.
But Dennis sounds like a smart person, and, you know, you play the situation. I just say 2-0 sounds a lot better than 1-0.
590-590 is a text line. We got some good texts. Maybe I'll keep plumbing the text line for its wisdom after all. There's just some good texts. Put your name on it. Put your location from it and on it. And if I like it, I'll read it. In the meantime, maybe I'll just talk to Barker. Back leg city.
Bam. 1-0 me.
It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Is just around the corner where the yours truly and Stephen Brunt. What are you doing? People weighing in. Will from Toronto. Hi, Jeff and Barker. Where's Dante Bichette? Hashtag raise up.
Raise up. Raise up.
See Tyler Glasnow last night?
He's pretty good.
He's good. Dante Bichette is a special advisor with the team, Will. He is still with the team. He's just not going to be around on a day-to-day basis. And the reason I'm reading this text is a bunch of other people have reached out. And that we had Dante on. That's just simply Dante doesn't need. After spending last year in a bubble, I think Dante said, I've done all this. It got a little old. So he will be there as a special advisor. Yeah, probably be working, probably spending time with the kids down at the play.
And his son is the starting shortstop. Maybe his son don't want to be hanging out with his dad all the time.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, that might have a little something to do with it.
Yeah. Chuck and Roncesvalles, High Park. To what extent can Bo Bichette's inconsistent fielding be attributed to him not being allowed to play shortstop every game, like when he is DHing instead? For the most part, he hasn't DH'd that much. He's DH'd once this year. He hasn't DH'd that much. I think Bo Bichette's inconsistent fielding, to me, he's a different guy when he doesn't have to think. When he just has to get the ball and throw it, he's a different guy than when he's got time to think. That's you see that every now and then with guys. But, Bark, we talked about this. It's remarkable. When he has to make an instinctive play.
How good he looks.
But it's when that ball maybe takes that extra bounce and now he's got to gather it and now he's...
Me personally, I just think it's more about his feet work. His feet work is, he's sometimes a little too early, sometimes a little too late. It's rare that you see him on time. And that's when you're not on time, you play catch up. You play catch up, what do? You bobble the ball. You don't throw it hard enough. You throw it too hard. He's in between a lot with his feet work, and you know, that's a work in progress. How's it going to look at the end of the season? I don't know. That's Louis Rivera is a pretty good infield coach. And I know they work really super hard on that, as does Kevin.
And I'm also going to say this, too. Do not underestimate, now this is from text exchange, don't underestimate how much work Marcus Semien's doing with him, too. Because Marcus Semien had a lot of defensive issues as a shortstop. He found Ron Washington. Yeah, Ron Washington was the guy that unlocked it for him. And he's doing an awful lot of work with Bo Bichette.
That's a lot to ask a guy that's learning how to play a new position. And quite frankly, it's not his job. It's like the Rowdy Tellez thing with Vladdy.
Yeah, it's not his Rowdy job. Tellez's, but you know what? If you're Marcus Semien, there's a little bit of mentorship there.
I guess.
There's a little bit of mentorship.
I guess. There can be some.
Let me throw some numbers at you here, because I know we like you some numbers. The Yankees hitting against Hyunjin Ryu, who will start for the Jays tonight. There's not much of a set. The only two Jays have had any at-bats against Jameson Taillon, Joe Panik, and Randall Grichuk.
Make you think
Randall
he just Grichuk's, looks fastball, huh?
Randall Grichuk's 2-for-3.
You know what you don't face a guy for? How hard does he throw, and what does he throw with two strikes? Mm. That's it.
He is he's using Jameson Taillon, by the way. Sweeney, I believe, mentioned this. He's scrapped his two-seamer, and he's throwing his four-seamer a little more now, trying to get it up. Everybody else in baseball, which is why TJ Zoik's sinker, I think, can be a decent pitch, because you just don't see it as much as you used to see it.
Don't throw cutters.
Against Hyunjin Ryu, Clint Frazier's hitting .375 in 8 at-bats. Aaron Hicks, .250 in 8 at-bats. Aaron Judge, .429 in 7 at-bats. He's got a home run. DJ LeMahieu, 26 at-bats. He's had the most at-bats of anybody against Hyunjin Ryu. I think we'd say DJ LeMahieu is a pretty good hitter. Mm-hmm. He's only hitting .231. Now, again, small sample size, but why do you think Ryu would... Ouch. Why do you think Ryu would be such a tough matchup for LeMahieu?
DJ, you would think, and he likes to hit the ball the other way. And what does Ryu do really well? He pitches into righties.
Right,
he's going to make you get the head out. Mm-hmm. I'm sure DJ wants to do that. And it's hard to all the time soft serve a ball to right field. Now, he's real good at it, and he's probably the best at it. He's staying inside the baseball and hitting that thing to the right side of second base. But you can't always do that. And that's why I think you see Ryu throwing more cutters in there. Mm-hmm. The cutter makes you, as a hitter, have to get it out front. You can't soft serve that the other way, and that may be a little something to it. And he locates very well. Like he rarely falls into the same pattern. He's very good at not pitching a guy the same way all the time. And again, it's not how hard you throw it; it is where you throw it.
This is going to be the second time the Yankees have seen Ryu. Last night was the second time this year, I should say, the Yankees have seen Ryu. Last night was the second time that the Jays seen Gerrit Cole. Does it make that much of a difference to hitter seeing the same pitcher so soon?
No, just the more you see somebody, the better chance you got.
I guess what
not
I'm saying,
swinging at his best pitch.
Okay, I guess what I'm asking is, because it's early in the year.
Yeah.
Is there an edge one way or another?
I would say early in the year, especially with Cole. I'd rather face him later in the year, because everybody's trying to find their way. They're trying to get their timing down. They're trying to figure out what kind of hitter they are. You know, sometimes you're dealing with weather, mm-hmm. the rain delays, and that's throwing your routines off. And now you got to run out here and try to hit 97 on the black away to the opposite part of the field. That can't be the easiest thing to do. The big league level, sometimes hitters overthink it. I know I was one of them. Try and hit everything. You can't do that. A lot of Blue Jays hitters try to do that because they think they can, and they're young. And what most young people do, they think they can do everything. Mm-hmm. Hitting's not that way. And then you saw, Josh Palacios. You saw that a little bit too. He's swinging from the hip. And what did Cole do? He'd flip him something to get ahead, and then he'd expand and let him get himself out because he knew he didn't have to throw him a strike.
Buck and Dan made a point yesterday. We got 2 minutes left. Damn it, I wanted to ask you about this earlier in the show. This is my bad. But they made a point, and it was Ben Wagner who was part of the broadcast crew who made this point. As a left-handed hitter, we understand that a decision is going to have to be made when George Springer comes back. Do you look at Palacios' left-handed bat as maybe giving him an edge and staying on the team once that comes?
Depends on what kind of hitter you think he is left-handed. Is Jonathan Davis a better defender? I ask you that.
I think he is, yeah. Don't you?
Is he a good, better base runner? And when all things are equal, better question, who can sit over there for 3 days and then come out and give you his best game?
Who do
play
you
better defense?
Jonathan Davis
better,
did it last
better
year,
better at
right?
bat. Can he, you know, yeah. shorten up, not okay. have a leg kick, have a two-strike approach, 0-0, just try and barrel something the other way?
Use it's a good addition for
base.
Palacios. So
but I
do
like
right
Palacios
now?
For bunting. I mean, he is a good bunter. I'm just not kidding. He's a good bunter. Yeah, yeah. You thought he knew, I'd throw that in there, didn't you? I don't think you could probably go wrong with either one of those. Again, it is when you're a bench player, you got to figure out a way to hit velocity.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think of the two cannot play for a couple of days and come off and turn around because they're going to come in a game late?
Yeah,
and if they're getting
in
a bat, it's going to be some flamethrower out of the bullpen who throws 97.
Yeah,
who can get that
enough.
Foot down and level
enough,
out their swing and stay short and quick and just barrel up a baseball? You know,
yeah.
I don't think it really matters which one. George Springer, hurry up!
Get your ass back in the lineup, George Springer. Come on now, Springer has sprung. It's your time, et cetera, et cetera. We'll be back tomorrow from noon to one with a Baseball Central pregame show ahead of the Yankees and Jays, and then. If they let us, well, they have no choice because we're scheduled. We're going to stick around to the end of the game and do Blue Jays talk. Is that all right with you, Barker? Yeah. Again, Kevin Barker, just reinforcing that we are number one. Writer's block is next.